This series was originally released as a Wondery Plus exclusive in 2021. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app to listen to Business Wars early and ad-free. November 2000. Ben and Jerry's head office, South Burlington, Vermont. Two excited employees pad down the corridor towards the CEO's office.
What do you think he'll be like?
Dunno. I'm just happy we can get this approved.
Unilever bought Ben and Jerry's 7 months ago. Ever since, there's been a leadership vacuum. Ben and Jerry are gone, reduced to hands-off figureheads, like KFC's Colonel Sanders, but with sugar cones. And CEO Perry Odak left the company the moment the ink on the sale contracts dried. Now, there's a new guy in charge, a Unilever trooper named Yves Couet. He began his Unilever career in his native France in 1976, and he's been crisscrossing the globe from posting to posting ever since. Couet welcomes the employees.
Come in, come in. You have a new product you need me to approve?
Yes, everybody else has approved it. We just need your okay.
The employee hands Couet a pint of a new Ben & Jerry's flavor called Vermont Honeymoon. Couet examines the container. He sees a rainbow arcing through two wedding rings.
It celebrates Vermont allowing same-sex civil unions.
Ben & Jerry's has a long history of supporting gay rights. A limited edition flavor seems fitting.
The first civil unions happened in July, but with the sale of the company going on and no CEO around, we had no option but to wait. But now that you're here, we can do it.
Couet stares at the expectant employees. They want him to approve a product supporting one of the country's most divisive issues. Couet knows Ben & Jerry's has more freedom to be political than other Unilever brands, but he's not sure how much more. And he definitely doesn't want to mire the company in controversy and tank his career during his first week.
I don't want this going out. It's too radical.
The employees reel. Being radical is what Ben & Jerry's is all about. Or at least, it was.
But the folks who get uppity about this will be vastly outnumbered by customers who will love our courage.
No. Pick something less controversial, like protecting wildlife.
The employees leave in a daze. They were told Ben & Jerry's social activism would continue. But now, they see how it is. They belong to Unilever. And nothing's going to be the same.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars.
Thank you.
On the last episode, consumer goods leviathans Unilever and Nestle reshaped the ice cream aisles. Nestle lured Häagen-Dazs into a U.S. joint venture, prompting Unilever to strike back by buying Ben & Jerry's. Now, Häagen-Dazs' future hangs in the balance. This is Episode 6, Breaking the Ice. September 2001, Shanghai. In the opulent Shintandi district, wealthy shoppers are preparing for the Mid-Autumn Festival. It's China's biggest holiday after Chinese New Year, and it's customary to celebrate by giving others mooncakes. But these round pastries filled with red bean paste and whole egg yolk are losing their luster. They've become China's equivalent of British fruitcake at Christmas. Traditional, but rarely beloved. And that's why China's most affluent are lining up outside the Häagen-Dazs cafe. At the counter, a woman with a Louis Vuitton purse peers at the handcrafted ice cream mooncakes in the freezer.
One green tea, actually two green tea, and two strawberry.
The server carefully starts boxing her mooncakes. They're shaped like the traditional delicacy, but instead of bean paste and egg yolk, there's decadent ice cream and a ball of mango sorbet inside, and the pastry's now a crisp biscuit base. The server ties a ribbon around the expensive-looking box.
That will be 1,072 yuan.
It's an outrageous price, equivalent to nearly $130, more than a month's income for the average Chinese city dweller. But the woman doesn't flinch as she counts out the money. She and her family are among the winners in China's new economy, and these Häagen-Dazs mooncakes will seriously impress her husband's boss. When Häagen-Dazs entered China in 1996, its strategy seemed nuts. Instead of competing with other ice creams, it presented itself as a Western luxury on par with Cartier and Rolls-Royce. To project that image, it charged top dollar, imported all its ice cream from France, and only opened cafes in the most exclusive locations. 5 years later, its cafes are popular hangouts for the rich. Its mooncakes are status symbols, and the strategy looks visionary. But it isn't just China's newly minted elite who love Häagen-Dazs. Breakfast cereal giant General Mills does too. Just weeks after the Mid-Autumn Festival, the Cheerios maker buys Häagen-Dazs owner Pillsbury for $10.5 billion. Häagen-Dazs is a big part of the attraction. It's a billion-dollar brand, and its Chinese success signals even better times ahead. But there's a problem. The ice cream brand's U.S. operation is ensnared in a joint venture with Nestle. So General Mills and Nestle make a deal. General Mills licenses control of Häagen-Dazs in the U.S. and Canada to Nestle for 99 years. In return, Nestle coughs up $640 million. But Nestle is not done guzzling ice cream just yet. 6 months later, it buys dryers for $2.5 billion and folds Häagen-Dazs and its other ice cream brands into it. Nestle now owns just under 20% of the $20 billion U.S. ice cream market, putting it neck and neck with its arch rival, Unilever. The deal also kills Dreyer's super premium ice cream brand, Dreamery. Since its 1999 debut, Dreamery had become the third place runner-up, the RC Cola of gourmet ice cream, with annual sales of $60 million. But to get antitrust regulators to approve the Dreyer's buyout, Nestle had to discard Dreamery. Dreamery's demise restores the old order. Once again, the U.S. super premium category is a two-way contest between Häagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's. Häagen-Dazs is still top dog with sales of $200 million, while Ben & Jerry's is just $30 million behind. But as Nestle binges on American ice cream, Unilever tightens Ben & Jerry's belt. Summer 2005.
South Burlington, Vermont. Ben & Jerry's new boss, Walt Fries, stands before the brand's independent board and nervously rubs the back of his neck. He wishes he never let the phrase difference testing slip out of his mouth. A board member presses Fries for an answer.
I asked, what does difference testing mean?
It's a tactic. The market's flat and ingredient costs are rising. We need to reduce costs to make profit targets. We're transitioning to cheaper ingredients in small steps, and at every step we run difference tests to check if customers notice the change. Now, if they don't, we do it again. It's less risky than a sudden drop in quality.
So you're salami slicing your way to a low-grade product. Huh. How far has this gone?
Butterfat levels are down from 16 to 14% in some flavors. We're also increasing air and shrinking chunk sizes.
Fries looks worried. When Unilever bought Ben & Jerry's, it agreed to create this independent board to protect the brand's quality and social mission. So far, it's mainly been a talking shop. It did nothing as Unilever shed workers, steered the brand away from controversy, and diluted its social responsibility work. But this time, Unilever may have crossed the line. Everyone hones in on board member Jeff Furman. He's a balding guy with long gray hair and a beard, and he's the closest Ben & Jerry's has to a father figure. He knew Ben & Jerry before they made ice cream and joined Ben & Jerry's board back in '82. His politics earned him the nickname Left of Lenin among Unilever execs. Other board members see him as the litmus test. If something's okay with Furman, then it's probably all right. Furman squints at Fries.
The sale agreement requires Unilever to consult with a board before changing product.
Fries gulps. Restoring the quality will cost millions, and the board has the power to sue Unilever into compliance. Furman chews over the options. The lower-grade pints are already in stores. Unilever won't change course easily. Plus, suing is a weapon of last resort. Deploying it risks a high-profile court battle that could shred Ben & Jerry's reputation. Furman looks at Fries.
In the future, please make sure you consult us before making changes.
Once again, the board has ducked the fight, and the erosion of the brand's ideals will continue. But while Ben & Jerry's loses its direction, Häagen-Dazs is seeking a cause of its own. 2007, Häagen-Dazs head office, Oakland, California. In a meeting room, Häagen-Dazs marketing executives are debating an ad agency's proposal for the brand's first socially relevant campaign. Brand director Katty Pien is keen. Customers' emotional connection with Häagen-Dazs is softening. She wants to deepen that connection before brand loyalty melts.
I think Häagen-Dazs loves honeybees is perfect.
Isn't it a bit too, well, Ben & Jerry's? We don't want to be one of those brands that hops onto every passing bandwagon.
Pien counters.
I feel it's genuine. Our products do rely on bees. 40% of our flavors depend on honeybee pollination. If colony collapse wipes out the hives, there'd be no strawberries or almonds or...
All right, but if we do this, it should be for the long haul. Too many brands do short-term campaigns. Let's make this an ongoing commitment.
In summer 2008, the Häagen-Dazs Loves Honeybees campaign launches, and it lands just as colony collapse becomes headline news. Häagen-Dazs gives away packets of bee-friendly wildflower seeds and earmarks some of the income from its honeybee-dependent flavors for research into colony collapse. It also gets people swarming onto YouTube with a hip-hop video that taps into the dance battle craze. Let's get the word up and work it out. This moon's right here is what it's all about. She can see us, bend your knees and get down real low and do the Häagen-Dazs wanted its campaign to reach 100 million pairs of eyes in a year. It hits that target in 2 weeks. The buzz lifts Häagen-Dazs sales 8%. But back at Ben & Jerry's,
troubles brewing. March 2009, London. In an upscale restaurant, Ben & Jerry's co-founders Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield are dining with Unilever's new CEO, Paul Pullman. Ben digs a letter out of his jacket. It's a copy of an ultimatum that Ben & Jerry's independent board sent to Unilever's top people a few months earlier. Its message is blunt. Unilever either meets its obligations to Ben & Jerry's, or the board sues. Ben starts reading out the board's list of demands.
Pay employees outside Vermont a living wage. Restore the independence of the brand CEO. Keep making ice cream at the Waterbury plant in Vermont.
Pullman interjects.
The Waterbury plan was dropped the moment the board objected. It was only an idea. I still don't know why the mere suggestion of turning the plant into a Ben & Jerry's visitor attraction upset the board so much.
Jerry responds.
It's about Unilever's pattern of behavior. It shouldn't be a surprise that the board saw it as just another cost-cutting move.
Ben resumes reading out demands.
Reinstate auditing of the brand's social impact. Reverse the cuts to product quality.
Ben, I want these things addressed, okay? This ideology where business is just about maximizing shareholder value has gone too far. It's insane. Our co-founder, William Lever, made his company the leading example of responsible capitalism in his day. I want Unilever to be that example again. To do that, I need Ben & Jerry's. No other Unilever brand knows how to do it. Ben & Jerry's can show all of our brands the way.
Pullman sounds genuine. But Ben and Jerry have heard similar promises from Unilever before. Ben points at Pullman.
Bottom line is, if Unilever doesn't meet the terms of the sale, Jerry and I won't be staying quiet about what's happening.
Let's try to resolve this together first, all right? A public bust-up would hurt the brand and the people that work for it. And I don't think any of us want that. I promise we will make it right.
In the months that follow, the winds of change blow through Ben & Jerry's. Flavors are restored to their original, more expensive specifications, and workers outside Vermont get a living wage. Unilever managers and the independent board agree to a 5-year plan to re-radicalize Ben & Jerry's. The plan includes removing genetically modified foods from its products, and only using suppliers who meet its social and environmental standards. And in September 2009, the brand marks the introduction of same-sex marriage in Vermont by temporarily renaming its Chubby Hubby flavor, Hubby Hubby. After 10 years, coasting on past glories, Ben & Jerry's is once more setting the pace for companies that want to profit and change the world. And the rest of Unilever is starting to follow its example. But as Ben & Jerry's rediscovers its mojo, a Hollywood hopeful is about to churn up the super premium scene.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
'2013. an indoor basketball court in Los Angeles. Justin Wolverton signals for a timeout and heads off court. He's a health-obsessed 34-year-old lawyer with pompadour hair. He flops onto the bench next to his work colleague, Doug Bouton.
Whew, that was a workout.
Bouton turns to Wolverton. There's a serious look on his boyish face.
I have news. I'm done being a lawyer. I hate it, and I'm quitting.
Wolverton jerks upright. He's not surprised. He's excited.
What are you doing next?
And not sure.
You could be my business partner.
What? Wait, you've got a business?
Yeah, I make a low-calorie ice cream called Halo Top. I've got a contract manufacturer producing it, and a few stores in Hollywood are stocking it.
You? You make ice cream? Wow. I thought you and sugar were like Superman and Kryptonite.
That's why I made it. I got fed up with eating a whole pint of some 1,000-calorie ice cream and then hating myself for it. I wanted ice cream without all the guilt. Each pint's less than 300 calories, but it tastes great.
Bouton looks doubtful. He's tried low-calorie ice cream before.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking, but it's true. Halo Top really does taste good because I replaced the sugar with this super low-calorie sugar alcohol called erythritol and stevia. Hey, look, at least come by my apartment after the game and try it.
After tasting Halo Top, Bouton is sold. The pair spend the next year getting stores to stock their high-priced, low-calorie treat. But with no money to promote it, it languishes in freezers. By 2015, stores are dropping Halo Top. Wolverton and Bouton revisit their strategy. They target gym-goers with Facebook ads. They also make the low-calorie count listing on the pint pot so large that it dwarfs even the Halo Top name. Sales rise, but barely. By 2016, their credit cards are maxed out and bankruptcy's looming. But then, a GQ journalist writes a story about how he lost 10 pounds by eating nothing but Halo Top for 10 days. It's a stupid, even potentially dangerous diet. But the story catches fire on social media. Influencers start recommending the brand. Celebrities like Khloe Kardashian begin name-dropping Halo Top. Sales double month after month. Supermarkets find people don't treat Halo Top like ice cream. Instead of buying some every now and then, they buy enough to eat a whole pint every day of the week. In 2016, Halo Top sales hit $50 million, allowing the brand to air its first TV ads, starring a demon who heads to heaven to file a complaint.
What the home is this?
Halo Top ice cream. We just creationed it. What do you think?
It's delicious. But 280 calories per pint, 20 grams of protein.
Right. Now you can eat a whole pint and feel great.
No! You're supposed to feel ashamed. Stay out of my territory, Featherface.
Then, in summer 2017, Halo Top does the unimaginable. It briefly outsells both Ben & Jerry's and Häagen-Dazs in U.S. grocery stores. The news stuns both brands. No challengers even come close to matching their sales before. Alarmed, Ben & Jerry's rushes out a low-calorie line called Mooforia. But each spoonful still three times as calorific as Halo Top. Häagen-Dazs finds itself in a bind. It's long refused to use the emulsifiers and stabilizers found in Halo Top. The brand also worries about how to deliver on flavor while stripping out the sugar and fat that makes ice cream so delicious. Eventually, Häagen-Dazs hits on the idea of using ultra-filtered milk, but it takes more than a year to get the recipes right. In early 2020, Häagen-Dazs's low-calorie Heaven line finally arrives. By then, the fire Halo Top started is already burning out. The rush of excitement around low-calorie ice cream has peaked. Sales of Halo Top's pints are down to $200 million from its 2018 peak of $360 million. But Halo Top's boom-bust breakthrough and the rise of newer super premiums like Jenny's and Talenti suggests that the Ben & Jerry's Häagen-Dazs duopoly isn't as stable as it used to be. And that makes staying relevant more critical than ever to the top two ice cream barons. For Ben & Jerry's, the progressive ideals baked into its brand help it move with the times. In the 80s, its Peace Pops fought the Cold War. Today, it supports Black Lives Matter. And just as with Peace Pops, for every customer alienated by its politics, there's another eager to buy into a brand that shares their values. But for Häagen-Dazs, the way to stay relevant isn't so obvious. Summer 2020, Oakland, California. It's a new decade and a fresh start for Häagen-Dazs. After years of trying to best Unilever, Nestle's lost its taste for ice cream. It's offloaded its U.S. ice cream interests into Froneri, a joint venture with a French private equity firm. But for the Häagen-Dazs team, the move to a company devoted to frozen desserts is an opportunity to rethink its identity. In a meeting room, Chief Marketing Officer Elizabeth Marquez leads the team through a brand health check.
The insights suggest Häagen-Dazs has lost a bit of relevance. We have to close that gap, right? So let's think about what the brand stands for and how it can evolve.
Marketing Director Rachel Javen offers a suggestion.
There's quality, but we're 100% dedicated to that. Absolutely. That's not changing. So what else? What about luxury? Häagen-Dazs says luxury, but is what it says about luxury dated? Yeah, that's it. There are different kinds of luxury, right? Let's explore that.
Several months later, with the COVID-19 pandemic raging, the team joins a Zoom meeting. They're here to listen to LA ad man Keith Cartwright share his plan for refreshing the brand's vision of luxury.
Our aim is to shift Häagen-Dazs from a product-first to a culture-first brand.
He brings up a photograph of Ruben and Rose Mattis, the husband and wife team who created Häagen-Dazs and the idea of super premium ice cream. They're standing outside the South Bronx ice cream factory where it all began.
Ruben and Rose created Häagen-Dazs to be a small luxury everyone could enjoy. But what is luxury? It used to be handed down from an ivory tower, but today, luxury is self-expression. Something you define in your own terms. It doesn't have to be serious. It can be playful, too. Luxury exists in moments big and small, no matter where you are. And Häagen-Dazs can be a part of that.
Cartwright brings up another photograph. In it, a young woman stands next to a tall glass ice cream freezer cabinet in a drugstore. She's eating strawberry Häagen-Dazs straight from the pint with a look of bliss on her face. Next to her are the words, "Luxury is where you are." Hashtag, that's Dazs.
Through the hashtag, that's Dazs campaign, Häagen-Dazs will move on from the old definition of luxury. It'll provide a platform for new, diverse, and underrepresented creators to use their talent to share their definition of luxury, whatever it may be.
It's been 60 years since Ruben Mattis redefined ice cream. Since then, his brand has spawned many imitators, fought with Ben & Jerry's, and even learned to coexist with its Vermont rival. And it's changed hands many times. But unlike most brands that get swallowed up by big corporations, Häagen-Dazs, just like Ben & Jerry's, has stayed true to its roots. And maybe that's why they both remain frozen in place at the top of the super premium food chain. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Episode 6 of Häagen-Dazs versus Ben & Jerry's for Business Wars. Next on Business Wars, we're digging our spoons into the ultra-premium ice cream scene with food journalist and author Charlotte Druckmann. We'll also meet Pooja Bavishi. She's the founder who's putting together a unique twist on America's favorite summertime treat and redefining the next generation of ice cream in the process. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. Special thanks to Keith Cartwright, Rachel Javen, Stephen Moss, and Kelly Patterson for sharing their expertise for this episode. If you would like to learn more about the Ben & Jerry's Independent Board's battle to re-radicalize Ben & Jerry's, well, check out Brad Edmondson's book, Ice Cream Social, The Struggle for the Soul of Ben & Jerry's. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe and Ace Anderson. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.